Right, so that was the first thing I wanted to do was apologize slightly for the somewhat pretentious title. Originally I thought that I was going to do an overview talk about two different avenues of research into the search for realistic in-theory cosmology, namely the Hawking-Turok model, and then I was going to touch on the work I did with Raphael Bousseau on that, and later I was hoping to get to the Herschava-Witten cosmology scenarios. And I found some new solutions of that theory with Harvey Rayall, a student of Stephen Hawking at Cambridge, in this paper, Dynamic Dilettante Domain Walls. But I started writing this sort of long-winded talk, and it ended up being something like 80 transparencies. And so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to focus on this work with Harvey today, the Herschava-Witten cosmology. So the basic question, if you like, is can we obtain a realistic model for cosmology from string or M-theory in some natural and straightforward way? And of course, this has different connotations for different people. For me today, I'm going to be focusing on this sort of ideal scenario. I want to start with 11-dimensional supergravity. I want to compactify on seven dimensions, and I want to get some kind of four-dimensional effective theory, which has sort of the usual properties I want, in particular the appropriate amount of broken supersymmetry. And crucially for today, what I really want to focus on is the extent to which I can get a cosmology with slow roll inflation. And so I had an approach to doing this that I hope is going to work. And actually, I didn't get inflation in Herschava-Witten theory, but I sort of learned a lot about what it takes to get inflation in this picture. So even though sort of I failed, I learned something anyway. So just to remind everyone what I'm going to mean by inflation here, I guess if I give this talk in Stanford, I'll need to add some more names here. But anyway, the basic idea was was that you can solve a lot of puzzles by assuming that there was a period of exponential expansion in the early universe. And all I'm going to mean today by this is that if I write everything in F or W coordinates, I mean that the scale factor is accelerating. So accelerating expansion in the scale factor. That's really all I mean by that today. So what is Herschava-Witten cosmology? Well, let's just go back to the Herschava-Witten picture. So the strongly coupled heterotic string was identified by Herschava and Witten as M-theory on an S1 mod Z2 orbifold. So sort of in cartoon form, you have this S1 doing this Z2 orbifolding like so, and you get these two fixed points, these two big black X's here. So actually the red circle becomes just a red interval. This Z2 symmetry just collapses you down to an interval. On each end of the interval, you get in these 9 plus 1 dimensional planes E8 gauge fields, which are required for sort of generalized Green-Schwarz anomaly cancellation. So that's what happens way up in 11 dimensions. And then following a suggestion of Witten, or a paper of Witten, I should say, Lucas, Overt, and Waldrum said, okay, we have various reasons for thinking this might be a phenomenologically viable or relevant corner of the M-theory moduli space, so let's compactify this thing on a Calabi-Yau manifold to get a 4 plus 1 dimensional theory. So now I have sort of a fourth dimension of space running from some 3 plus 1 dimensional hypersurface, which we want to think of as our universe, and some other 3 plus 1 dimensional hypersurface, which we want to think of as the shadow universe. And what's amusing is that you have a relation between the 11 dimensional scale, the gut coupling, the effect of Newton's constant, and V, the volume of the Calabi-Yau manifold. And when you insert the phenomenological values of alpha and G, you find that the 11th dimension is at least an order of magnitude larger than the scale of the Calabi-Yau space. So there's an energy range in which the universe appears to be effectively five-dimensional before we see the Calabi-Yau scale. So that's interesting. In a little more detail, just to write it all down in gory detail, what you get is N equals 1 gauge supergravity in five dimensions coupled to chiral boundary theories. So just explicitly, I get a bulk action that in the graviton multiplet has gravity, some U1 gauge field with the usual Chern-Simons term. This dilaton is basically related to the volume. The volume is basically e to the minus something phi, e to the minus 2 phi, in fact. This dilaton, in other words, is measuring the scale factor, the breathing mode of the internal Calabi-Yau space. This A is related to the number of units of four-form flux, which you have to leave turned on the internal Calabi-Yau space in order to maintain consistency of the Bianchi identities in 11 dimensions. This guy here is the dual of the three-form in five dimensions, the scalar here. This is a complex Ramon-Ramon scalar. This guy is just a sign telling you which end of the interval you're on. And this is the kinetic term for that Ramondermont scalar. I'm going to turn most of this stuff off except for the breathing mode, because most of it's just junk. It's not going to tell me about inflation anyway. Okay, so the key thing that's really going to be of interest today is the form of these boundary terms. They're nearly Nambu, ordinary Nambu terms, except they have this funny coupling to the dilaton. And really the main thing, what I'm really going to push today, is I'm going to sort of rederive the Israel conditions, or sort of generalize, if you like, the Israel conditions, to allow for domain walls which couple to a bulk field, which is allowed to vary in the bulk, so that as the domain wall moves in the bulk, energy density can flow between the bulk and the domain wall. These are just the gauge fields that came from the E8 multiplets. You would want to turn these on, for example, if you wanted to talk about reheating or what happened after inflation, but I'm going to turn all that off. So in other words, I eliminate everything except the Calabi-Yau volume term, and I get this sort of picture. In five dimensions, I have Einstein dilaton with a Liouville potential, and this will have no hat over it for bulk things. And then in the boundary, I have this whirl volume action, which has a Liouville coupling. And this is what I really want to emphasize here, that this is the key subtle point with domain walls in string theory. They generically couple in this way to a bulk scalar field. For example, as I'll mention later, the D8 brain of the Romans theory has a Liouville-type coupling to a bulk dilaton. And in fact, the method which I'm using here to find dynamic cosmological scenarios in the Herschel-Witten picture can also be used to find non-supersymmetric or dynamic D8 brains in the Roman city. Yeah?
Usually when in general relativity, when there's a boundary in any dimension, there are also boundary terms of the metric.
You
have a good variation principle. Is that these or are there some others?
The Gibbons-Hawking boundary term, I'll have to add that in order to get the Israel conditions right, yeah. I'm going to go through the derivation in just a second, yeah. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Where did the V come from? Is the V?
Yes.
V, yeah. V is the Liouville potential in the bulk.
So that's E to the...
E to the minus root 2, in the case of Herschel-Witten, 2 root 2 pi, with a factor of A squared up front, where that was the number of units of four-form flux on the... internal Calabi-Yau. The hat, so hatted things are the things which are on the boundary, are on the domain wall. Yeah, and things without hats are the things that are in the bulk. Good. So let me just run through the basics of what a regular domain wall. So ordinarily, you assume that matter and energy sort of are trapped on the domain wall. For example, in cosmology, if you've got a double well potential, you assume that, more or less, you're led to something like a Nambu-Goto action. You've just got the area of the whirl volume swept out by the domain wall times some constant. And what this means when you vary that guy relative to the induced metric is that, if you like, the induced stress energy, or the stress energy seen by observers who live on the domain wall, which is what we're really interested in today, because the Herschel-Witten picture tells us that we live on a domain wall, if you like, it's just a constant times a delta function where x equals 0 to the location of the wall times this sort of diagonal function. And so energy is localized on the wall. Now there are various things that we want to change about that kind of simple domain wall if we want to say that we live on a domain wall. I mean, if we live on one of these things, then there's various things we want to modify. The first one, I'll just mention briefly because I'm not actually going to do this today, but I think it's of interest, is we want to change the equation of state for the matter on the domain wall. So as we saw in the previous slide, the Nambu-Goto type equation of state is more or less rho equals minus p, which is sort of inflationary, which makes sense. The Vilenkin-Ipser-Sakhievi domain wall sort of inflates. It's a de Sitter. However, you might want to put radiation on the brain instead, i.e. you might want to have the relation between energy density and pressure look something like this. And so I've worked out a sort of little toy model, and in a way in which I will explain momentarily in more detail, basically the Israel conditions governing the motion of a domain wall in the presence of a black hole. So the domain wall is in orange here. The black hole is in black. R is the distance from the black hole to the domain wall. And sort of the equation of motion for the scale factor as a function of co-moving time always takes the form, or can always be put in the form, of a particle of unit mass with zero energy moving in a potential V. And what you find then is that the potential for the inflationary equation of state, just for a three brain moving in a Schwarzschild black hole, When you put just Nambu matter on that guy, when he's just a big trampoline, in other words, you look like this. And so this means you can either roll away from the black hole, as I've sort of drawn here, or you can fall into the black hole. However, if you change the equation of state to have a traceless radiation, you get this sort of behavior. So you drastically change sort of the behavior of your brain just by changing the equation of state of matter on your brain. So that's one thing that we'll have to modify. Well, I mean, so you go through an inflationary era, and then that ends, and then you reheat, and then radiation and matter and other things appear, and you're no longer inflationary. So
is the matter made out of phi?
Well, I'm hoping that, yeah, today I'm trying to get the lambda to be made out of phi, yeah. The other fields would be these other E8 gauge fields, or you might have even stacks of D3 brains thrown in there for good measure or whatever. But the other matter fields could be coming from something else, so... I'm not even going to talk about it. I mean, this was just an aside. Sorry. Yeah. Here, the point today is that I want to do something which I regard as slightly a little more subtle. I want to ask, what happens when stress energy can move between the bulk and the brain? That's sort of what I'm addressing today. And so let's go through the Israel derivation of the Israel conditions in a more general setting. So the starting point for the Israel conditions is you take some D-dimensional manifold, and you imagine the world volume of the domain wall here, dividing M up into some distinct domains, which I'll just denote M plus and M minus, with each side of the domain wall being denoted this way. My convention in what follows will be that the normal points into the bulk on each side of the wall. This is slightly unconventional convention. As I mentioned earlier, the metrics at most C0 as you move through the domain wall. Okay, so let's start with the Einstein-Hilbert action and vary it relative to the metric. I get a term like this. However, that contains a normal derivative of the metric, which by definition is allowed to be discontinuous. So I get two bulk contributions which won't necessarily cancel. And so I have to add a given talking boundary term. So that takes the usual form, this. I vary this term as well, use a bunch of identities, and when the dust settles, you get this. So far I've just done more or less the old Israel prescription. Now, the point is, I want to add in arbitrary matter here, okay? So let's just put in some arbitrary Lagrangian on the domain wall. Use the fact that the stress energy on the wall, for folks who live on the wall, is the variation relative to the induced metric. And then I get this sort of variation. And so what I do now is I add all three of these things together and look at the equations of motion. And I get this for the Israel conditions. We're now, instead of getting a difference, I'm getting a sum here because my convention is that the normal is pointing into the bulk on each side of the domain wall instead of in on one side and out on the other. So in other words, this tells me that a jump in the extrinsic curvature as I move through the wall is proportional to the stress energy of the wall. Okay, so I want to talk about when things aren't conserved on the wall, what happens. So I take the divergence of the stress energy tensor on the wall, and therefore I get this sort of thing. Then I use the Kodaty relations to reduce to here, to replace these extrinsic curvatures of this boundary with the Ricci tensor of the bulk. Of course, the Ricci tensor of the bulk can be eliminated using the bulk Einstein equations to give me the stress energy in the bulk. And so in other words, this gives me a general expression which shows me how stress energy on the boundary gets traded for stress energy in the bulk when there are fields which are allowed to couple, to which live on both. Yes?
Yeah. should we be able to go back and understand how this came from just having a V2 on an original S1? Should I be confused? Because the original setting that there was no boundary, there was just the V2 action classified as S1.
Right. Here's what I'm going to do. So, yeah. I'm going to find bulk spacetimes which solve the bulk equations of motion and allow for the motion of these dilatonic domain walls. And then I'm just going to draw those domain walls in like this. And then I'm going to draw another one in like that. And then I'm going to take the little region between them, like so. And then I'm going to draw the mirror image of that over here, like this and like this. And then I'm going to take the region between them, like so. And then I'm going to identify the inside of this with the inside of that, and the outside of that with the outside of that. And then that's an S1 with a Z2 action, right? That's conceptually what's going on here. See, so ordinarily, every solution that's been found so far by Lucas and Obert et al., these aren't dynamic. These just sit like this. That's the difference. I'm going to make the move relative to the dilatant.
The reason why you can trade one for the other is because of this bulk coupling to the breather mode on the
yeah, yeah, and the fact that it's also on the... Yeah. 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 Uh-huh.
And is it if and only if that is, can all the solutions with the V2 action be gotten by this kind of construction?
Oh. good question. Can all of them? Does this method work? I guess in principle it does. That actually, I just went through my talk again and put in some caveats about whether I found all the bulk solutions because when there's a dilaton, I don't actually know what the uniqueness theorems are. That just occurred to me. But right. Okay. So that's the generalized conservation equation. So let's go back to the equations of motion for the system of interest. So again, I have this bulk Einstein term here. I vary phi and I get the usual kind of equation. With this boundary condition, which is more or less expressing energy conservation, again, this says that the jump in this dot product is proportional to this derivative of the boundary potential. The domain wall motion, again, is modeled by that Israel equation at the bottom. However, in Horshava-Witten theory, I still haven't said anything about that was a very general treatment of domain walls. But as you were just saying, in Horshava-Witten theory, you have a reflection symmetry, so I just get an overall factor of 2. In other words, I can drop that little summation sign, yeah, and I get this sort of thing for the Israel equation. So what this tells me is that if I want to find one of these dynamic dilatonic domain walls moving in this dilatonic background, all I have to do is find a hypersurface whose induced metric H is related to its extrinsic curvature K by this sort of relationship. And the key new thing is that this can vary. This is no longer constant, right? Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, there, of course, the motive is really that in the CFT you have these operators that can naturally be, and I can't imagine what would be the natural. Maybe, I don't know, but yeah. Just. That's true. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Just as an aside, in general, these bulks would be non-static, and it would certainly be interesting to know about them. I put in the general non-static ansatz for the metric on GR tensor, and it said that it had 20,000 characters or something for the ansatz. So it wouldn't even print it out for me. So it may be hard to find. That doesn't mean that it's not there. They would be like dilatonic Vidya solutions, like collapsing black holes with that. Yeah. But anyway, for now I'm going to stick with the static guys, simply because that's easier. Okay. So in other words, I make the static ansatz where this final guy d omega k is the line element of some d minus 2 dimensional space of constant curvature, and his properties will have bars over them. Okay. So the Israel condition told me that I had to relate the extrinsic curvature to the induced metric. And this is just sort of a mess. I mean, you go through the calculation. And for that metric, you find that the ij, or the angular d minus 2 components of the extrinsic curvature take this form. Dot denotes derivative relative to the bulk time. Prime is derivative relative to the bulk radius. The position of the wall I'm going to denote little r t. The time-like component is this. I've been using the usual relations here for what the extrinsic curvature is. I substitute into the Israel equations, and I get this sort of velocity component. In other words, this is sort of the term that's telling me about the velocity of the domain wall. I can eliminate this from the 0,0 component, or the acceleration term. And this gives me this complicated thing here. So what? Well, the point with that is that has, if the domain wall moves, that equation, which I just pushed off the top, has to hold at every point visited by the wall. So in other words, if it's dynamic, if the thing moves radially, you can integrate that thing, and you get this equation. And this is really the key thing. A, B, and R are metric coefficients, recall. This is some constant of integration. And this is the boundary Liouville potential for the dilaton. And so this is a relation between the metric components and the bulk dilaton. In other words, this is what comes extra. This is what's beyond just the ordinary Israel conditions, if you like. They lead you to non-trivial consistency conditions when energy, when the dilaton couples in this way, both in the bulk and on the boundary. So in a way, it's still the Israel conditions, but they give you something new. Similarly, you take that boundary condition for the dilaton, use the Israel condition, and again assume if it visits a range of R, then what I'm going to do in a moment is I'm going to integrate that to get phi, for example, as a function of R. This is how I locate the dilaton. So in other words, the point here, which is kind of amusing, is that I'm saying that if I have a non-static domain wall and a static bulk, which couples to some bulk field in the way in which I describe, then I get conditions relating the bulk metric and that dilaton. And I'm using these as ansatz to solve the bulk Einstein equations. So just to use a buzzword, that's sort of holographic, right? I mean, the boundary is controlling the bulk. So throw that in. It's not terribly surprising. But yeah. Yeah, if it's non-static, then much more interesting things, I'm sure, will happen, actually. So, yeah. Okay, so again, I've got this sort of form for the bulk metric. I'm going to adopt the usual gauge, and then I'm led to this sort of a system of field equations. As I mentioned, I can then use these consistency conditions to solve these equations. So, for example, the assumption that I've got a Liouville domain wall potential with the coupling alpha of the dilaton phi to the domain wall, plus the consistency equations, I can integrate out for phi, and I get phi looking like this sort of logarithmic, with this sort of logarithmic behavior, where this is some constant of integration. And for the radial function r, the prefactor of that homogeneous spatial section, which is going to be where I put the domain wall, if you like, I get this sort of behavior, where again, c is a constant of integration. So that looks familiar if you studied, for example, dilatonic domain walls. What?
The assumption comes out naturally from the logarithm
of the This does, yeah. That assumption there, yeah. Yeah. But I'm assuming it based on other people might not want to do Hirschhoff-Witten covariance. but yeah, and in fact, you can include the other parameters which measure deformation properties of the Calabi-Yau, and you still get Liouville type. There are other types of scalar.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I haven't put the domain wall in yet. Yeah, but if it moved to a region where this gets. Yeah, it can get very large, and the Calabi-Yau would become visible, or or we would all go away, I guess, or it can become very small. Right? So, yeah. That's one of the problems with these. If they move, then the internal space isn't stabilized, right? But I think it's still interesting. I wanted them to move, because if they're moving, then they're more likely to be inflating than the supersymmetric ones, right? Oh, right. So again, these are the bulk solutions I'm describing here. So typically it'll be a naked singularity or horizon over here, and then you see our universe is moving like this, and the shadow universe is moving like that, and here's the fifth dimension. So we may well be over there, but we may well be out here. We can move around.
Where's our world
line? Yeah, the shaded stuff is the stuff between our universe and the shadow universe. So only gravitons and gravifotons and other things in the five-dimensional supergravity multiplet can move in there. And we're some kind of gauge fields or so on, trapped.
We're living on those outer lines.
Yeah, we're living on the outer line. Yeah. We live on the orbifold.
What's the method here?
What's that?
What do you mean by the left or the right of the fixed point? I thought the fixed point in between has all your natural space, I thought.
This is being identified with this.
Yes, but like you're saying, if you draw that little squiggly line to the left of it, what does that mean?
Well,
that
oh.
You're starting with the big space-time, and you're saying the way I construct my physical space-time is by taking these two pieces of it.
Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah.
It's not
this is an auxiliary construction.
Okay, fine. Now I understand.
Yeah. This is an auxiliary construction. Sorry. Yeah.
But that's where our
to find solutions of Hirschhoff-Witten cosmology. Yeah. Sorry.
There are parameters.
Yeah.
In the family of solutions that,
could be, yeah. I'll give you examples where we crash into the naked singularity. Even solutions where you crash into the other, into the shadow universe, and so on. So.
How many dimensions?
4 plus 1. We live on the 3 plus 1 boundary of the slab. There's a fourth dimension of space from our universe to the shadow universe. And then there's a shadow universe over here. What's interesting about the shadow universe is because these couplings vary across the, they depend on R, the physical couplings in the shadow universe have to be different from ours. So. Right, yeah. I mean, yeah. Other people have noticed this.
So that's the thing, the shadow universe behaves like dark matter in our universe from the point of view of...
Yeah, only gravity can get across. More or less, gravity. Yeah. I mean, that's what some people say anyway.
So I don't know. Your presence would be detected by the same means by which you would detect the presence of dark matter.
Yeah.
And
also, the smart detection dimension can be...
Largest, yeah. Again, it was an order of magnitude larger than the Calabi-Yau, so, yeah.
So six dimensions are connected?
Yeah. Calabi-Yau is the internal, yeah, so there's six dimensions there. So we've gone from 11 down to 5. That's 4 plus 1, so... Yeah. Because we're made up of matter that gets trapped on the orbifold.
You can't move.
We're made up of, for example, some of these E8, well, I mean, we're made up of something that cannot move. From one orbifold to the other orbifold. We're made of stuff that, say, in the original picture, you would be made of stuff that's trapped over here because it's trapped there because of some anomaly cancellation mechanism that doesn't allow it to move from one end to the other.
From the string theory point of view, were degrees of freedom that correspond to open strings with Dirichlet boundary conditions in that direction?
Okay, that's
not,
yeah.
This is really an M-theory story, so that's not quite the appropriate story.
I like to keep my talks as supergravity as possible, right? Because once you talk about string corrections, I don't know what's going on.
We have the paper.
It could be pretty large.
But it can be.
But how do we know it's more?
Experimentally, you know, it's smaller than a millimeter from Cavendish's curve.
Yeah. Okay. Otherwise, we'd see an inverse cube ball, right? Yeah, so, for gravity.
It's an integral, but,
it's small.
Small.
Yeah.
So it's both the fifth dimension and the fifth point.
That's right. But it could be right here, right now, and we just don't see it because we can't move in that direction, right? So. Okay.
But it's clever for trying to understand hierarchies of data.
Right. Yeah, it solves the hierarchy problem, exactly. Yeah.
The Planck scale is now a millimeter.
Right. It might be, right?
That's an experimental upper bound. I don't think you need to.
I mean, Herschel-Witten is the most explicit realization of the large internal dimension stuff within the context of M-theory, I guess, is one way of saying it. So.
Is that all stable and analyzed?
Are people sure that there aren't instabilities where the picture kind of falls apart?
Well, I guess if my orbifold, I'm going to describe solutions where the two things rush apart or rush together. So that's either going from strong to very weak string coupling, respectively. So I suppose the various types of approximations will become.
But if they can rush apart, why can't they rush apart to be larger than a millimeter?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I would want them to rush apart for a while, and then, you know, you end the inflationary era, and then they become radiation-dominated brains, and then they just sort of coast along next to each other. Because remember, in the radiation case, I drew that picture because there was a stable potential. There was a stable minimum of that potential.
So why did they inflate only to be in the millimeter apart when the rest of the universe inflated to much larger, much easier?
Well, if God were here, I would. That's a hard one. I mean,
I think
that's
a fine tuning.
Yeah, it's a fine tuning. So.
Yeah, but the dynamics in the interval are sort of a bit different from the asymmetry between the two.
Yeah, better. Right. So then I then assume that the bulk potential is Liouville-Ligand because that's what came from Herschel-Witten theory. And then I can solve for big U. And the key point here is that I find there are three types of bulk solution classified by the relative behavior of the boundary and bulk couplings. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to just sort of quickly run through the three types of bulk, and then I can tell you about the three types of domain wall which move in those bulk. And it will turn out that the second type is the only one relevant for Herschel-Witten, but I think it's nice just to have a complete picture. So the type one is really kind of simple and is well understood by, say, the cosmology community, and that's when both couplings are zero. In other words, the dilaton is constant, or even more simply, that the bulk potential is just a cosmological constant. So in other words, in the bulk, I can always rescale things so that I'm just Schwarzschild de Sitter or Schwarzschild anti de Sitter. I'm solving the vacuum Einstein equations, and So I get this sort of form for things. In other words, where this U has this term K telling you about the curvature of the horizon, ADM mass appropriately generalized all of it, Hawking and Horowitz, for say asymptotically ADS spacetimes, and then a cosmological constant term. So for example, here, if I have positive vacuum energy in the bulk and a positive mass, then unsurprisingly, perhaps I get Schwarzschild de Sitter, i.e., here the red line, for example, is the spherical horizon. I get a black hole horizon, a cosmological horizon, and then going off to an asymptotically de Sitter region. This is U. This is that metric function U. Yeah. Hence zeros correspond to horizons, and so the inner one is U. Otherwise, I get a green line, in which case the thing is nowhere static, and this is sort of a crazy solution. R becomes a time-like coordinate, and it has a cosmological singularity at R equals zero. The other case is, for example, in this scenario, I can have positive energy and negative mass, in which case I get a naked singularity, a cosmological horizon. I go up to the asymptotically de Sitter. If the vacuum energy is negative and the mass is positive, then I get an event horizon. I'm asymptotically ADS, and these are contain the so-called topological black holes, which were studied by Mann. Actually, and he studied domain wall motion in these backgrounds because he was pericreating the black holes. So there's another example of where this sort of thing's been studied. And finally, this guy here is sort of the reverse, both of these things being negative, of the thing that I talked about on the previous transparency, where both are positive. So those are, like I say, the configurations, you know, Schwarzschild, Lanczi de Sitter, and de Sitter that we know about. Now here's where it starts to get interesting. The type 2 solutions have this relationship between boundary and bulk coupling, and they require you to be flat, k equals zero, which is kind of disappointing if you were hoping for open inflation to emerge in this picture, for example.
Is this the relationship between the bulk and boundary couplings that you get from
Hirschhoff-Witten? Yeah, yeah. So k is zero in this limit of Hirschhoff-Witten theory, which is disappointing if you wanted to do open inflation, for example. Yeah. Okay.
But when k is that the same thing as a negative total is one, or not the same?
Right. I mean, in this picture, what it really means is that, say, if this is a black hole here, k of that horizon is vanishing. So it's like if you're doing ADS CFT, it's like the infinite volume limit of the Schwarzschild ADS black hole has k equals zero, for example, when you do that rescaling. So it's in that sense. And then the domain wall is moving in that background in this way, and so it will also have k equals zero. So if you live on that domain wall, you'll think the universe has k equals zero.
But is it k equals zero with the constant?
Yeah. You'll still see inflation stuff. Yeah. That sort of thing. Yeah. And there can still be a lambda in the bulk as well. And
there can be a lambda on the boundary.
Yeah.
And have k overall.
Yeah. Well, I should say the scale factor can be accelerating, yeah. So the effective lambda for people who live on the boundary would be, yeah.
So it's not disappointing for the present world. I mean, if the present world has omega total, omega matter of 0.3,
mm-hmm.
then you could still have k equals zero with the cosmological.
It's not disappointing. Some people might be. I've been, you know, a lot of interest recently in open inflation as well. But yeah, okay. So now the dilaton has this running behavior, which is kind of more interesting. These two things are constants of integration. This is sort of like a mass, but it's better to think of it as a non-externality parameter, especially in the context of D8 brains, which I'll talk about at the end. This is more or less what you turn on in order to. Make a non-supersymmetric D8 brain. And B is related to the bulk coupling and the dimension by that relation there on the bottom. So, just as an amusing aside, this thing has scale invariance. So if I rescale the metric, the bulk metric, by some constant lambda squared, and simultaneously the dilaton, or the breathing mode of the Calabi-Yau in this way, then I find that the action is just multiplied by constant. And so the variation is left invariant. And that's kind of interesting. So Hirschhoff-Witten theory in this limit is scale invariant, which is either surprising or not, depending on. Okay. Here's, again, just some plots of what this guy U looks like. A lot of these are not known. And D equals 4, just to point out, these were actually found with this onsets for big R by Kai, Yi, and So, who were looking at topological black holes. In any dimension but for vanishing mass, they were found by Liu, Pope, Sezgin, and Stell. This guy's kind of interesting because here, again, R becomes time-like. Some of the directions are being squashed while others are being inflated. So it's like a Kasner ADS solution, which Gary Gibbons tells me he's never seen before anyway. So it may be new. Finally, the type 3 couplings are related by this relationship. The dilaton, again, is the same as in type 2, this logarithmic running. Everything else is just kind of becomes a bit of a mess. However, because it's a little bit more of a mess, as we'll see in a moment, you get a richer range of possibilities for the domain wall motion. Little b is beta times, which was the coupling of the bulk to the dilaton? Yeah, times the root of d minus 2, yeah. Once you fix d, it's you. Yeah. And here's some of these guys. And again, just to point out who did this originally, or in some cases did this originally, this was found for negative curvature black holes, if you like, in D equals 4 by Kai, Yi, and So again. More details of these solutions are in the paper. You get a richer structure for type 3 because you can have any possibility for K. And I was kind of hoping that this would be the Hirschhoff-Witten guy because you also get a richer range of behavior for the domain wall motion as well. So anyway, I have found... And originally I put all, but just now I put this in here because, like you said, I don't know that actually that's all of them. But anyway, so I found some of the dilatonic bulk spacetimes in which a dilatonic domain wall with a Liouville coupling can move. So what about the domain wall motion? That's the real rub. If you live on the domain wall, we really want to know. We want to know what's going on for people who live there. So again, everything is this Israel equation, which takes this form. Again, R is the position, tau is the proper time for people who live on the wall or who move it with the wall. This is the coupling on the boundary, that Liouville coupling on the boundary. Prime denotes derivative relative to R. The only subtle point really with solving this is when we have these horizons and U can change sign, you might think that everything goes wrong. But actually, as Farhi, Guth, and Gubin discussed in their paper on creating the universe in a lab, all you have to do is go to Eddington Finkelstein coordinates. And then everything works out. Just go to coordinates that cover everything. Okay, so brute force, as I mentioned earlier, allows me to write the Israel equation in a form in which the evolution of the scale factor, so the point is that a surface of constant R then, this is what the induced metric, this is the form of the induced metric. And so I'm therefore interested in the evolution of that scale factor, and brute force allows me to put that Israel equation from the previous slide in this form, again, a particle, unit mass, potential F, zero energy. Where the potential takes this form. So all I have to do is insert the V hat and the U, and I'm in business, and the R. So since the particle has zero energy and the kinetic term is positive, then the potential has to be negative, first thing. Inflation, as I mentioned today, just means this, accelerating scale factor, and from the equation on the previous slide, that's equivalent to the statement that the potential has negative slope relative to R. And of course, that's hardly surprising. That means that the scale factor rolls down the potential like that and accelerates, just like a particle rolling down a hill and accelerating. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for universes that do that because they're inflating. All right. So again, just to run through all the different cases. For the type 1 solutions, I've got that for the potential. If you like, the effective cosmological constant on the domain wall is this. If you want an interpretation of this, here an example would be, suppose you put some positive energy density on the boundary and some negative in the bulk. So you have a positive energy density domain wall moving in ADS. Well, this makes it want to expand because it's positive energy density. It wants to sort of expand. But this makes it, this you're putting it in a big box in ADS, and so that makes it want to contract. And so the two things can counteract each other. And of course, if they're both positive, then it wants to inflate more and so on. Right. Interpretation of that. So here, for example, is the potential for these guys. this line, so red denotes forbidden because it's the potential has to be less than zero. So when both energy density and when the energy density and the mass is positive, for example, the domain wall can come in from r equals infinity, stop at some finite r, and then roll back out. Similarly here, come back in and then inflate back out. I'm talking about it coming in simply because I'm talking about the maximal extension of the domain wall viewed as a space-time in and of itself, i.e. it's like the sitter. It comes in and goes back out. That's the sense. Amusingly, in this case, you get this little oscillating guy. It inflates and slows down, and inflates and slows down, and sort of does that forever. For type 2 solutions, the potential takes that form. Again, it's perhaps a little more useful to see the pictures. And here we start to see something interesting. A finite period of inflation, the particle zooms down and then it sort of coasts along after some finite constant, finite negative constant. Similarly here, it coasts along. Here we have some internal inflation. Again, runaway inflation. These guys are never inflating. They have the wrong sign of the slope. Particle can never get out. Those correspond more or less being in an ADS type potential well. For those solutions with the finite period of inflation, you might be interested in could they give you a realistic amount of inflation, i.e. 60 E-foldings or whatever you think is realistic. And the point is that the scale factor increases by this sort of factor. So for this to be like E to the whatever, just to use cosmologist speak, whatever this, you say that this would be the B squared here would have to be exponentially close to 1. So you've got a real fine-tuning there on the B. No.
And beta,
right? So no, yeah, it doesn't. For the ones, when you put in the actual Hirschhoff-Witten couplings, no, it's off, as we'll see. In fact, they don't even inflate ever. Unfortunately, you'll see in a sec. It's bad news. I mean, I was hoping something more exciting would happen. But. Well, in the usual picture, it does, because when it's supersymmetric, the two universes sit at constant distance, and the potential is flat. But today I'm going to describe for you some where they don't actually remain constant. They can go shooting apart or they can even crash into each other. Yeah. So that will be something different. Again, the type 3 solutions, f of r is getting more complicated. That's just what it looks like. Far better to have the pictures. Now this is really amusing to me because take this guy here. Positive bulk energy, negative mass, and spherical sections. This at arbitrarily late times, there's the tiniest amount of negative slope there. So that's sort of like this is a quintessentially decaying domain wall, if you like, to use other buzzwords. Again, a finite period of inflation, the bouncing guys, eternal inflation, and so on. And just as another comment, for the solution which expanded forever, you were seeing power law behavior at very late times. And again, I would be very interested, it would be great if there was some other way of getting moduli from maybe some of the other deformation parameters of the Calabi-Yau, which would give you the type 3 type couplings. Maybe by only considering the breathing mode, I get the wrong couplings. I'm not sure how that all works out. But okay. So again, I've now found all potentially all solutions describing dynamic dielectronic domain walls in a static bulk. So now I can return to the original puzzle, and that was, how do I make Hirschhoff-Witten cosmology dynamic? So here it is. So for the model of Lucas et al., the couplings were this, alpha and beta were related in this way, V naught was this, the units of four-form flux, V naught hat was this. Consequently, it's manifestly a type 2 solution. These two signs correspond to the fact that here, if I say that the jump here is such that the energy density is positive, then the jump here is such that the energy density is negative when I do these identifications, because it's just one's growing and one's shrinking as you go through them respectively. Right? Okay. It doesn't correspond to physical energy density seen by observers who live in either the shadow universe or the shadow universe. It doesn't mean that in the shadow universe they have the opposite energy density or anything like that. So again, just to write down the bulk solution, it takes this form, where these are the explicit equations. And the potential, unfortunately, is this, which, of course, looks like that, which is bad. That doesn't have negative slope, so they don't inflate. So that was a little bit saddening. Nevertheless, these are new solutions, which have some amusing properties. So again, the potential in which things move has to be negative, so the mass has to be positive. When the mass vanishes, then I get back the supersymmetric solution, which was already found by Lucas et al. So in other words, I think it really is appropriate to think of this quote-unquote mass as just a non-externality parameter. In their solution, since when the mass vanishes, the potential vanishes, you just put the two universes anywhere, and they remain static, because there's nothing to push them around. And the bulk is non-singular in that case. And so you could at least say that at least the size of the fifth dimension is stabilized in that picture. However, when I turn up the non-externality parameter, there are no killing spinners in the bulk, for one thing. There exists a time-like naked singularity at r equals 0 and a cosmological horizon at this value of r. And most of all, static walls are no longer possible. The positions given by this equation, these two signs more or less correspond to whether the wall is crashing into the naked singularity or moving away from it. Well, yeah, I mean, because we can crash into it, yeah. In fact, we generically do, depending on... Yes. Well, it's not a supersymmetric background, so it's kind of a bad sign, isn't it?
Well, I mean, in just generically, in string and long M theory situations, if you get curvatures that are really large and everything else, you expect other terms to come into play.
Yeah.
And so you modify the equations of motion.
Have not thought about, again, I'm...
One of the things that could be the best.
Yeah, yeah, I'm keeping this at the supergravity level. Stringy corrections. Anyway, so there are these two walls and two sign choices, hence four possibilities in all. Plus plus corresponds to both walls emerging from the naked singularity and then eventually crashing into each other at this rate, co-moving time. Minus minus is the time reverse of that. Minus plus and plus minus are kind of amusing because they correspond, I like to think of them, so here's our universe and here's the shadow universe, say, our universe in blue and the shadow universe in black. This is kind of like a universe-shadow universe pair creation. And when you remember that the distance here is the string coupling, you're producing them from a region of very weak string coupling. And that's kind of amusing. I mean, that's just... I don't know if that... So you can't do a no-boundary ansatz for the rate here because there's no static... there's no bounce surface. No surface of vanishing extrinsic curvature. They just crash into each other. So I don't know how you would assign a rate to that sort of thing. But so those are the sorts of solutions we found. So anyway... In conclusion, what could we do? Well, we could make the bulk non-static. That may or may not be a hard problem. We could add in D3 brains. Diwali and some other people have been... So basically today I've been focusing on this and this and the playoff between them. But they've been adding in D3 brains. And when they're separated, you get this potential. And then as they coalesce, the potential rolls down. And they call that brain inflation. And this is another mechanism. And this would just be another source of energy density overall. Finally... And I should mention this here, we found some new dynamic D8 brains of the Roman theory. So unlike some 8 brains which I talked about some years ago, these are actually 8 brains of the Roman theory and not Hallenbert-West theory. And more or less, they are the 10-dimensional generalization of the 5-dimensional Hirschhava-Witten brains I discussed today. In other words, you take the Bergsoff et al. Solution, and then there's a way in which you can add in a mass parameter, which gives you a moving D8 brain. And I guess... But on that note, I'll stop. So.